Okay, so we are holding on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph top line. We quoted before Braisa that said like this. We were discussing the question how, first we started discussing the question, how we know that a woven garment, even if it's small, is Mekabel Tumah. Now, we've learned before that there, again, there's a minimum size for a garment to be Mekabel Tumah, but we said that's if it's a piece of a larger garment, or, for example, if it's a piece that is yet to be woven into something larger. So then there's a minimum size, 3x3 etzbaos for wool and linen, 3x3 tefachim for everybody else. But now we're talking about, let's say to begin with, a garment that's made small. Take, for example, a gautel. A Shabbos gautel, for example, is not 3x3 etzbaos, but it's still considered a beged, and it's still Mekabel Tumah. So we discussed the question how we know that, and also how we know that jewelry, even if it's a small piece, is Mekabel Tumah. And what if you have a piece that's partly cloth and partly jewelry? For example, the kind of things that we learned earlier in the parak, we have, for example, various kinds of headbands and things that are made with a fabric backing and then pieces of gold or whatever sewn onto them. Then we also mentioned in the Braisa, so we said like this, you have a pasuk that says, oi beged, or a garment, is a Mekabel Tumah, where there it's talking about Tumas Sheret. So from that we learn that even a small garment is a Mekabel Tumah. That a small ornament, that a small piece of jewelry is Mekabel Tumah, we said we learned from the tzitz, where the tzitz was only 2 etzbaos wide, and it's still considered important enough to be considered a tachshit in its own right. And then we said, if you have something which is partly cloth and partly tachshit, then we say you're learning that from the fact that it mentions that kli maisa, that it mentions in connection with the booty that they captured from Midian. In Parashas Matos, it says that there was kli maisa, called kli maisa, any keli that is functional. And then we said in the Braisa, now what we're going to focus on now in the Braisa is we said that also there's an additional thing that a sack, which can mean, a sack means material that's made out of, for example, goat's hair. Tosfos, by the way, points out, you have two different kinds. You have a finer goat hair that's used to make fine clothing, and then you have a coarser goat hair, which is used to make sacks and things like that. So the kind that we're talking about over here is the coarser one that's used to make sacks and other things like that. So we say that there's an advantage to that over clothing in that it's tame because it's woven. So now we're going to focus on that. We said musa sack ala beged, a sack or sacking material has an advantage over a beged, shetomei mishum orig, because it becomes tomei on the grounds that it's woven. The question is, what does that mean? Alter beged lav orig? What do you mean? A cloth is a regular cloth made out of wool or linen or what have you is also woven. So in what way are we saying that a sack is more able to be mekabel tumah than a beged? The answer is hachi karma, what the braisa means, musa sack ala beged. Alpha pisha ene orig tomei. What the braisa actually means is when you have material that can be used for sackcloth, in other words, this coarse goat's hair, even if it's not woven together, it can still be Mekabel Tumah. And even if it's smaller than 3x3 etzbaos. So again, unlike a regular beged, where it needs to be, you have to have spun threads, and then the threads have to be woven into a piece of cloth, and then we're saying the cloth is Mekabel Tumah. When it comes to sack material, when we're talking about this goat hair, we're saying it's going to be Mekabel Tumah even without that. So the question is, well, my chazi, what would you use if you have something, so in other words, what we mean is, even if it's not woven, even if it's only braided together, then it's still able to be Mekabel Tumah. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains further on, you have like this. When you have threads that are just braided together, what you do is over here. Actually, what we're going to talk about is so you have a couple of threads that are twisted together. You have a couple of individual hairs from the goat that are twisted together to make slightly thicker to make thicker strings or whatever, and then you have a couple of them, and then you have a couple of them are braided together. So therefore, the twisting them together is the equivalent of spinning them into thread, and the braiding them then is the equivalent of weaving them. As opposed to Rashi points out further on in the sugya, if you only have them braided together, then that itself amounts to the the making of Thread, and then in that case, it's still, in other words, it still has to be, in a certain sense, it still has to be, it still has to have both things have done to it, Tobori and Aru. It has to be spun into threads, and those threads have to be woven together into something. The difference is, we're saying over here, that when it comes to a sack, it doesn't have to actually be woven per se, just the fact that it's braided together is enough.
Well, where do you take that from?
So this is what we're saying. This is what we're going to say over here. So the question is, what would that be suitable for if you just took a couple of hairs from a goat hair and twisted them together to make threads, and then you took a couple of those threads and braided them together, what would such a thing be suitable for in such a small piece that we're saying that it would be mekabel terumah? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan says, shekein oni kaleya sholosh nimin, because a poor person will do that. He'll take three threads that are made out of where each thread is made of a couple of goat hairs twisted together and maybe dyed, and he makes a braid out of three such things. And he uses, he hangs that around his daughter's neck, and then he can put various kinds of ornaments on it. So therefore, so now you have, Rashi explains, it is tovli, it is already you have individual hairs that are twisted together to make the thread. So that accomplishes the tvi'ah. Then you've taken those threads and you braid a couple of them together. So there you go. So now it's mekabel terumah. And Rashi explains the same way as at the beginning of the perek we talked about, for example, you had hair ribbons that are hollow, that are also, they're made in somewhat the same way. They're made by knitting them together as a hollow kind of thing, like sort of the way stockings or whatever are made, and we still call them orig. So the same thing over here, these ones that are braided together can also be considered a form of adriga, even though it's not the regular kind of weaving that we're going to talk about in the next perek that involves shesi and erev, but that involves things going at right angles to each other, but you do have them connected together in a fairly permanent way by braiding, and therefore it's still makabel. Therefore it's makabel terumah. Okay. So where
do we know it has to be tavui arig? Where does that come from?
Because we're going to see later on. We're going to see in the next part of the sugya over here. We're going to contrast this kind of thing with ropes. With ropes, you don't have both. With ropes, you don't have that first a couple of individual threads. Or at least the kind of ropes that in those days are not made of a couple of various individual threads that are spun together, that are twisted together to make a thicker thread, and then a few of those are braided together. It's only braided together, and therefore Rashi further on explains that amounts to just the tvi'ah, that amounts to just the spinning of thread, and therefore you only have spun thread, and it's not woven or braided in any kind of way beyond that, and therefore, as we're going to say, it's not makabel terumah.
But you have begadim that are not weaved, that are just spun together.
No. Well, if you have them made out of felt, then fine. Felt is makabel terumah because it's felting them together is effectively the equivalent of weaving them together. You're still joining them together in a fairly permanent way. Okay. So, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. When we say in the pasuk that a sack is makabel terumah of tumas sheret, ainly el a sack, so based on that, you would only know that an actual sack cloth is a tame, because as we learned a couple of days ago, for example, a shepherd could use it as a piece of clothing. How do we know that we also include that even a kilkali or chavuk that are made out of sack material are also a kabel terumah? Rashi uses a couple of French words to translate the word kilkali and chavuk over here. It comes out basically that the kilkali is part of the harness that goes around the neck and the front quarters of the animal, and then the chavuk would be something that goes around the belly of the animal to hold the saddle in place. So that's how Rashi explains them. Rabbi Nachmanano gives a different explanation that a kilkali is. He says that a kilkali is something that you put underneath a pillow or something like a sort of like as a pillowcase, and then the chavuk would be a seat cover or something. Anyway, how do we know that such things are also makabel terumah, even though they're not a complete sack? Tamabayma oi. Therefore, the pasuk says, or a sack, and the word or comes to include that anything that even if it's just made out of sacking material, even though it's not a complete sack, it's still makabel truma. Continues the braisa, yochol shani marve sachavolim ve'es ha-mashichos. You would think that we could also therefore include ropes, and we can include regular ropes and measuring ropes, that those are makabel truma as well, because they're also made out of the same material. No, tamad lema sack. After all, the pasuk had mentioned a sack, meaning ma sack tovu v'orib, just like, and this is what we were talking about, just like a sack, you have both things are done. You have individual hairs twisted together to make, spun together to make threads, and then those threads in turn are woven together to make a sack. Af kol tovu v'orib, the same thing, in order for something to be makabel truma, once made out of sacking material, it has to be both those things tovu v'orib. So therefore, not ropes and not ropes and measuring ropes and things like that, where you only have there's only the braiding together. There's not a previous step of twisting threads together, of twisting individual threads together to make a thicker thread, and then braiding those together. You just have the braiding, and as Rashi points out, that amounts to just the tovu. So you only have tovu, you don't have orig, therefore it's not makabel truma. Okay. Continues the braisa. So now that was talking about tumas sheret. Now let's talk about tumas nes. Harehu oimer. Now the pasuk says in connection with tumas nes, again the psukim about the war with Midian, again those psukim in connection with the war with Midian, where it mentions you have after they came back from the war, then you have Elazar HaKohen speaks to the soldiers and informs them about the dinim of, and informs them about certain dinim of tumah batara and kasher and kalim and tovel and kalim and whatever, and then later on you have about the jewelry that they gave as a present to the Mishkan. So again, as we said, from those psukim we learn a lot of details about the dinim of tumas nes, because all of those things became tomei with tumas nes, because all of them were talking about things that were found on the dead bodies of the Midianim, or that bodies had touched or whatever. Therefore, they're makabel truma. So the pasuk says over there like this, in connection with a mess, it says v'chol kli or v'chol masi is imagoy matizchato. It says any kelim made out of leather or anything made out of material from goat, which means, in other words, which includes, for example, goat hair. Tizchato, you have to cleanse them, meaning that they became tummy mess, and you have to sprinkle them with part adruma water and dip them in the mikveh. So the Braith says, same thing. The word v'chol masi izim, therefore, come to also include this kilkali and the chobok. Again, these two types of straps that go around the animal to hold the harness or the saddle in place, according to Rashi, or a seat cover or a pillowcase, as Rabbi Chananel says, whatever it is. That those things are also makabel truma. That they're also makabel truma smith. Again, yochol shani ma'abet ha'chavolim et ha'mashichas. You would think that by the same thing, ropes and measuring ropes should be makabel truma of tumas nes. So first the braisa tries to say that maybe we should argue that we're going to end up saying that we need a pasuk to tell us that not, but we're going to argue first that maybe you don't need a pasuk. Maybe you could learn it by a mamosinu. Maybe you could learn it by a binyanan. You could argue like this: the dinhu. You should be able to figure logically on this. Timei b'sheres v'timei b'nes. We're saying that there are things that are made from goat hair that are able to become tomei with a sheret. We're also saying there are things made out of goat hair that are going to be makabel truma from a mess. So you could argue. You could argue by a simple mamasinu, by a simple binyanab. Mak shetimei b'sheres b'timei el tovi v'arug. So you would say that just like by a sheret, we're saying we're excluding ropes and measuring ropes, because those are not both tavui and arug. Those are only tavui, we said. It's only the braiding them together amounts to twisting them into thread, and therefore you don't have the second step of arug, and therefore we said they're not makabel truma. So therefore you would argue the same thing. After timi b'mes, the same thing. You would argue by tumas nes. Lo timi ela tavui v'arug. You would argue the same thing. That's only mitame, only if it's tavui v'arug as well. So you would say, therefore, you don't necessarily need a pasuk by tumas nes to teach us. Once we have that by tumas sheret, then we would say the same thing applies to tumas nes. In fact, the Ritva says that what it is maybe we would say the binyan av. You have the word kol, which for pashtus ought to include everything. We have over here kol call Maseism. But on the other hand, you could argue maybe the Binyanav tells us to limit that. Maybe the limitation of kol only includes things that are tavri v'aru. Maybe it teaches us to exclude ropes, just like you do by a sheret. However, the Braisa says hein, but is hein, could that be correct? In Hekel the Tumas Sheret, you can say maybe the Torah is being Hekel by Tumas Sheret and excluding ropes from being Makabel Tuma, because Shehi Kala, because after all, Tumas Sheret is a very light kind of Tuma. All a person has to do when they were Tumas with a Sheret is dip in the mikveh and they need head of Shemesh and that's it. Nokio the Tumas Amestri Chamura. How could we say that that Binyan Av could tell us to do the same thing with Tumas Mes, which is much more severe, where you have 7 days of Tumah and you need Parah Adrim of water. So therefore, we can't learn by a Binyan Av like that. Therefore, Talmud Lema, Beged V'Or, L'Gzeir HaShavah. Therefore, we have to resort to L'Gzeir HaShavah. It says the words Beged V'Or by Tumas Sheret. It says that Beged is Matame and leather is Matame. It says the same thing, but by a Sheret. The expression is, Oi Beged, Oi Sok. By Tumas Mes, by Midyan, it also says V'chol Beged, V'chol Kli'ur. So it mentions Beged and Ur by both of them. So we have a Zeh L'Shava, and therefore we learn. So now, when we have a Zeh L'Shava, Ma Beged V'ur Ha'om B'Sheret Leitima Ela Tavri V'Arug. So just like by a Sheret, we're excluding things that are not Tavri V'Arug, and therefore we're saying, and ropes are excluded, Af Beged V'ur Ha'om B'Sheret Leitima Ela Tavri V'Arug. So the same thing by a Mes. The same thing. It would only be ones that are spun and then woven or braided. So that would exclude ropes. And on the other hand, we also use the same zera shava in reverse. Uma beged va'or ha'omer b'mes kime kol masi yizim. Now on the other hand, just like by a mes where it says kol, where it uses the expression kol masi yizim, and kol comes to include something extra, and therefore it includes also the kilkali and the chavah. Ah, beged ba'or, ha'om b'sheret, tima kol ma'ase izim. So the same thing, by b'sheret, it means that also anything that's made from izim is metame, including the kilkali and the chavah. Now, the Gemara is going to ask soon that why we need that. We already had the word oisok, and we learned it from that. So the Gemara is going to explain soon. We're going to explain soon why we need the Gzeder Shavah to teach us that it's matame by the sheret when we already had oisok by the sheret. Okay, continues the Braisa. Ainly el adavar habamina izim. Now, based on this, we only know where the sack material, the actual sack itself, or the kilkali and the chavak, which are made out of such material, whatever. So we would only know so far, since the pasuk says by Tumas Mes, it mentions izim. So we'd only know if it's made from goat. So ainly el adavar habamina izim. Minayim rabbis adavar habamis navasusim is navafara. How do we know the same thing would apply if this sack or this kilkali or chavak or whatever was made out of hairs from the tail of a horse or the tail of a cow, which are also usable as sack material the same way. Therefore it says the words oisok. The Gemara says, what do you mean? The Gemara interjects a second in the Braisa. What do you mean? How can you learn from oisok to include from the oi to include hair from the tail of a cow or a horse if you already used it? You already earlier in the Braita, you said that the word oisok comes to teach us that a kilkali and a chavak are mitame by Tumas Sheret. So how all of a sudden are you taking those words and using them to teach you about hair from a cow's tail or a horse's tail? The answer is hani mili mitame delesik zera shava. That was true before we had the zera shava. Then we thought we need to learn the kilkali and the chavak from the word oi. Now that we realize we have the Gzeder Shava, because before we didn't use it, we only brought in the Gzeder Shava because we said you can't learn from a Mama Finu, from Sheret to Tumas Mes, because Sheret is so much more of a lenient Tumah compared to Tumas Mes. Now that we have the Gzeder Shava, and the Gzeder Shava works as Gzeder Shavas usually do, in both directions, we learn from Sheret to Mes, and from Mes to Sheret. Now that we have that, now we have the word oi by oi stock is extra, and therefore we can use it instead to teach us about hair from the tail of a cow or the tail of a horse. Okay. so far, in other words, what we're saying is that this, so far what we're saying is like this. A sack is actually in the Kabbal Truma. In the case of Trumas Sheret, we learn that because it says stock, and in the case of Nes, because in the case of Trumas Nes, because it says Master Izim. We know the Kilkali and the Chavok are Metame by a Nes because it says Master Izim, Kol Master Izim, anything made from goat. And then we learn from a Gzeira Shavah that the same thing is true, therefore, of Trumas Sheret. In turn, we say that it has to be similar to a sack. It has to be tovri v'arug. Therefore, ropes are out. And from that, we learn with the Gzeira Shavah from that Trumas Nes that ropes are not makabel Trumas Nes either. Okay. So far, so good. But now we still need to figure out, okay, so this that we said about hair, this that we said about the tail of a cow or the tail of a horse, that we only have by a sheret, again, because we have the word oi for it. How do we know that that applies to the mess as well? So again, the A and the L of the sheret, so you would only know that things made from a cow's tail or from a horse's tail are makabel truma, that are makabel truma by a sheret. The Tumas Nes Minayin, how do we know the same thing applies to Tumas Nes? Again, we could argue maybe we don't need a pasuk, the Dinhu. Maybe you can argue again, we can make a Mamasinu. Time b'mes, the Time b'sheret, and here would be the other way around. We see that we're metame it by a mess because we have the word kol master izim, we're saying that Znava Sus and Znava Parah. So again, so you would say, Oy Sok, it says in connection with Sheretz, how do we know it's by Tumas Nes? So you would say like this, Vidinu, Kime B'mes, we're saying the Pasuk makes anything of Mase Izim, anything made from goat hair, has Tumas Nes. The Kime B'Sheretz, we're also saying anything made from goat hair is Makabal Tumas Sheretz, except the ropes, as we said. So you could argue, Mase Kime B'Tumas Sheretz. So now, let's figure it like this. Just like by sheret, when things made from goat hair are makabel truma, we're saying also dabra above is navastus and is navapara for maisehizim. So you're saying that by a sheret, you're saying anything that comes from a horse's tail or a cow's tail is also like maisehizim, and we're learning that from the word oi. So you would argue, akhtikim in the left, also dabra above is navastus and is navapara for maisehizim. So you would argue the same thing by Tumas Nes. So in other words, before we said we can't use a mama sinu like that because just the opposite. We were talking about a kula. We wanted to exclude ropes from tumma, and we were saying, okay, maybe they're excluded from a lighter tumma, which is tumma sheret, but they were included in a stronger tumma, namely tumma sinu. But now we're doing the other way around. Now we want to be marba something. We want to add that something is makame, namely things made from horses' tails or cows' tails. So if we're going to say, then a mama sinu should work. If we say that it's makame, even by tumma sinu, surely it should be metame by Tumas Sheret, which is a much lighter Tuma. However, the Braisa says that doesn't work. Hain, is that so? In Hirgo b'Tumas Erev, you could argue just the other way around. Maybe the Torah is only marbe things from the Znava Sus and the Znava Fora, only when it comes to Sheret, only by Tumas Erev, Shehim Meruba, which is, you have many more kinds of Tumas Erev than you have Tumas Nes. Tumas Nes, you really only have the basic kind of thing. You have a human dead body, and you have a human corpse, and you have one of the three ways that a person is near it. They touch it, they carry it, or they're under the same roof as it or whatever, and they're matame. But ultimately, there's only one kind of thing in the world, the human body, that has that kind of Tumas. As opposed to Tumas Erev, you have many different kinds of Tumas Erev. You have Sheret, you have Shechat Zera, you have a lot of different kinds of Tumas. Yeah, Sheret, Nevela, Shechat Zera, touching a Zav, touching a Tmei Meis, all of those only Tumas Erev. So you have many more Tumas Erev than Tumas Shiva. Many more cases where a person is tamei only until the evening after they go to the mikveh, versus you only have the one case where they're tamei 7 days. So therefore, you could argue. So, So therefore, you could say, okay, maybe therefore the Torah is saying, that's fine. When it comes to an easier kind of tumor, well, not an easier kind of tumor, a more common kind of tumor, where you have many different kinds of things that can create that degree of tumor, then therefore the Torah is going to say that also things made from a horse's tail or a cow's tail are metame. How can we be marba that the same thing should apply to tumas shiva, where you have so little of that, because you only have one kind of tumas shiva, only from a dead body. So it's not logical to. You can't do that. The Rashba, by the way, brings a different explanation from a high guide that tumas shrotim is merubah in the sense that it's much more common. You have many more shrotim, you have many more dead shrotim out there than you have dead bodies. The Rashba doesn't like that explanation and prefers Rashi's explanation. Okay, anyway, the point is that, now, we're not saying that's not a chumrah of tumas sheretz over tumas nes, but it is a certain advantage that tumas sheretz has, the fact that this type of tumah, a tumah that lasts one day, is much more common than tumas shiva. So why should we assume, without any basis, just based on a mamasinu, that what applies to tumas sheretz, that something that's made from the tail of a cow or the tail of a horse, should be metame, why should we assume that applies to tumas nes as well? Therefore, we need a pasuk for it. And the answer is the same zera shava as before. Talmud lama, beged va'or le zera shava. So again, we're using the same zera shava as before. Nema beged va'or b'sheretz, v'nema beged va'or b'mes. Again, you have the same zera shava that said beged va'or by both of them. Ma beged va'or ha'om b'sheretz, also dobam is abom is namasus. So the same thing as we're saying that that when it comes to a sheretz, things made from a horse hair or cow hair are also the same thing as things made from goat hair. So the same thing. So ultimately, what we're saying is there is a detail that we're learning from Oisok, namely the detail about horse hair and cow hair. There is a detail that we're learning from Kol Masayizim, which is the Kilkali and the Chavok. There's also something that we learn from the word sack, actually, that it says by Sheretz, namely that we're excluding things that are not like a sack in that they're not Tavri V'Oruk, therefore we're excluding ropes. And then, once we have some of these things by the Sheretz, we have some of these things by Tumas Nes, and then the Zeder Shava ties it together and says that everything that applies to one applies to the other. Rashi points out, actually, So the Gemara says umufne. Now this that we have this zera shava from the word beged va'or in both places, it must be that this zera shava is mufne. It must be that the words that we're using for the zera shava are extra in both places, and we didn't need them because we could have known these dinim in other ways. Ge'i lav mufne, because if you're going to say that the words are not mufne, ikal mifrach, then you would be able to slog up the Zera Shava with the point, Mala Sheretz Shekhen Tamed Kadosha. Because a Sheretz, not only a Sheretz has an advantage, as we said before, over Tumas Nes, fine, to slog up a Mama Sinu, you don't really need a Chumrah in one side or the other. You just need some kind of difference, some kind of advantage that one has over the other. And a Sheretz has the advantage because the kind of Tumah that it creates is a more common kind of Tumah, because you also have the same kind of Tumah as created by Nevela and by Shechat Zera and so forth. But now, when it comes to a Gzeira Shava, if you want to slog up a Gzeira Shava, you need an actual Chumrah. And if you're going to say that these Tsukim are not Mufna, then you have a Chumrah in Sheretz over Mes, which should be able to slog it up. Namely, Mala Sheretz Shekin Metama B'Kadosha. A Sheretz in Metama with a much smaller amount than a Mes. For a Sheretz, you only need a lentil-sized piece of the Sheretz to be Metama. For a Mes, you need a Kazayis. So that would be, if the Gzeira Shava is not Mufna, then you would be able to slug it up on that basis. And in fact, Rashi points out the same thing before, in the first half of the Braisa, when we used the Gzeira Shava the other way around, we were using it to say that we were also using it to apply something from Sheretz to Tumas Nes, namely about the ropes, that ropes are excluded by Sheretz and that they're excluded by Tumas Nes. The Gemara could have pointed out the same thing, But because after all, Tumas Nes has a Chumrah over Tumas Sheres, and then it lasts for 7 days, the Gemara didn't bother over there because it wanted to first finish quoting the whole Braisa before we start discussing it. But we have to say, the Gemara says, that this Gzera Shava must be Mufnet, because otherwise it wouldn't work. Otherwise there's an easy way to slug it up.
The amount that you need for a Sheretz versus is less being less than what you need for a mess. Is it Doraisa?
Yeah.
The Kazayis and
Kazayis versus Kadosha, respectively. Yeah, I mean these are included in the concept of Shiurim. We have a concept where the Gemara mentions, and we had it in Brachos. Shiurim Chatzitin Vachitin Alochel Moshe Mitzinai. Certain details of Shiurim we said are Alochel Moshe Mitzinai, and among those are these kinds of Shiurim. The fact that you need a kadosha of a sheretz, the fact that you need a kazayis of a mess, so they're all halachah of Moshe Mitzinai. Some of them you have certain hints to. For example, I think the Gemara elsewhere mentions that since certain kinds of shrutim, when they first start forming in their mother's womb, when they're first recognizable as a creature, is there the size of an adasha, the size of a lentil? So therefore, that's the shiur. But it's not something that the Chachamim established. It's something that the Chachamim figured out, but it's something that's figured out, but it's halacha l'moshe mitzinai. Yeah, that's what it is. So again, so we have to say that this Gzeira Shava is mufna, otherwise the whole thing would not work. So the Gemara says, "Loi, indeed, if nuyin mufni." As a matter of fact, yes, I can demonstrate to you that these words beg and ba'ur in both places are mufna, because nechi sheres itkash l'shich matera. Now we know that there is a hekesh between Tumas Sheres and the Tumah of Shechat Zerah, Dichtiv, because we have a pasuk in this Shabbos' parasha, Ish Ashekeitim Eina Shechat Zerah. The pasuk describes different kinds of cases where a Koyan is now out to eat Kodshim or Tumah or whatever. One of them is if Shechat Zerah came out of him. And the next pasuk continues, the Samach Le Ish Asheyiga B'chol Sheres. And the next pasuk continues, or a person, so you have two psukim back to back. One part that says that it finishes off Oy Isha Shetaisim and Shechat Zara, and the next one begins that Isha Shiyuga B'chol Sheret. So you have a hekish between them, and a hekish is a very strong thing. You can't shmug up a hekish. Uchtiv Dei B'Shechat Zara B'chol Beged B'chol Ur Asher Yia Olav Shechat Zara. By Shechat Zara, the Torah tells us clearly that any beged or any piece of cloth. Or any piece of leather on which there is actual shichvat zera, then it's metame. So we see from that that it's tame, and then the hekish would tell us to apply that to sheretz. Therefore, beged va'or dekasi rachmona b'sheretz lomali. So why then would it have to mention it by sheretz? Shema mina la'af noye. Obviously, it must be in order to make it mufna. So that's it. Therefore, it says it clearly by Shechat Zerah. The Hekesh tells us to apply it to Sheretz as well. Therefore, by Sheretz, it didn't need to say it. And therefore, it's available for the Gzeira Shava. Okay. So the question is, Vakafi Mufnim Etzad Echadu. Okay, so far, so good. But that only gives you something which is Mufna from one end. And now that works according to the opinion, which you have in a number of places in Shas. Most recently, we had in a Nida, that when you have a Gzeira Shava that is Mufna Mitzad Echad, that on one side and one end of the Gzeira Shava, the word or the words that you're using are Mufna. So the Maiden, you're able to learn such a Gzeira Shava, the Ein Meshivin, and you can't slug up such a Kavachon, such a Gzeira Shava. So if you say that, then good. Even though we would have a logical reason to slug this up, because Sheretz has an advantage over Shechat Zerah, over Tumas Nes, namely Kadosha versus Kazayit. And on the other hand, Tumas Nes has an advantage over Sheretz in that it lasts for 7 days. Nevertheless, you would say once you have Mufna Mitzad Echad, then that's it. There's no going against that. So that would be fine. But what about according to the opinion that true? You can you're allowed to try learning such a Kal Vachomer, as such a Gzeira Shalvani, but then if you find a way to slug it up, then you slug it up and you don't use it. So then what are you going to say? In this case, we have a clear way of slugging up such a Gzeira Shalva, because again, Sheres and Mes have advantages one over the other. So then what are you going to say? The answer is, as a matter of fact, the words Begen and Ur by the Mes are also Mufna. Mechti Mes Iskas L'Shichva Sera, because you have also a Hekish between a Mes and Shichva Sera. This is because the same Pasuk we quoted before begins, Uliu in the Pasuk, it says, V'hanegeya b'chot mei nefesh, anybody who touches something that's going to make him tomei Mes, Oy ish asher tekin mena Shichva Sera, or a person from whom Shichva Sera comes out is tomei. And again, and again, by Shichva Zera, it says that Beged and Ur are Metame with Shichva Zera. Therefore, Beged and Ur, because of Rahman of the Mess, Wamali. So therefore, why would you need to say that Beged and Ur are able to become Tome by Tumas Mess? Shmami no lafnuye. Therefore, that teaches us that, again, it must be in order to make the Zera Shav of Mufna, and therefore to say that whatever applies to the sheriff applies to the mess and vice versa. Tosfos actually brings a question over here, which is that if we have a hekish between mess and shechvat zera and between shechvat zera and sheriff. So we have, ultimately, then we have a hekesh and then another hekesh. Tosfos brings a question here, Avraham Moshe, the question is from your father, Rabbi Eliezer from Mex. Yeah. Or your father's name, at least. Anyway.
My father's family, yes.
Yeah. What?
My father's family, that's correct.
Yeah, okay, anyway. So the question is...
Which Tosfos, by the way?
What's that?
Which Tosfos? Who's the Tosfos?
Tosfos Shnami no Lach Nui.
Which person is a Tosfos?
Tosfos is many different. There's many different Baalei Tosfos. In this case, they're quoting something. They're quoting a question from Rabbi Eliezer from Metz.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But there were hundreds of Baalei Tosfos. The question is, if you already have this Hekish from Metz to Shichvat Zera and from Shichvat Zera to Sheret, then it comes out. You can learn everything through that Hekish. So what do we even need the Gzeira Shavah for? In fact, I mean, when it comes to Kodshim, you can't do that. We learned back in Zvachim that when it comes to Kodshim, there's limitations on what you can learn Lamed min HaLamed, learning one thing from another through one of the Yud Gil Midas and then learning a third thing from the second one. But when it comes to other areas of Torah, we have no such limitations. So why B'chal? Do we need the Gzeira Shavah in the first place if we have the Hekish anyway? Okay, Tosfos just says, so the answer is, Tosfos says, okay, Tosfos actually doesn't give the answer. Different other Rishonim give the answer that, okay, whether the Rashba or other Rishonim say that, okay, sometimes the Torah will do that. Instead of, you could have learned it through the double Hekish, what the Pasuk makes is the Pasuk sort of simplifies it for you by giving the Gzeira Shavah. Elsewhere, Tosfos themselves gives an answer, which is that actually just the opposite. If you only had the Hekish, then you would think that everything is similar between them. It would mean, therefore, that maybe the kind of tumah that applies from one applies to all of them. Maybe, for example, the fact that a mess is an aviyavot, that tumah would apply to all of them. Maybe other things. So just the opposite. The Gzeira Shavah tells you limit that only to what we're learning from the Gzeira Shavah and not other things. But then the Hekesh tells you that there is a certain similarity between them, namely what we're saying over here, namely that the dinim of what's in the Kabbal Tumah by one apply to the other one. Okay. Now that we talked about the war with Midian, and the jewelry that they captured over there, so now the Gemara gets into a little bit of just a short discussion about that jewelry and about what do we have? The Sukkim mentioned over there like this. It says they fought against Midian. Now we know originally why did they fight against Midian. The whole thing was because you had that Bilam had given Balak the idea. He said, you know, you tried all you were trying to curse the Jewish people. You didn't get anywhere. But you know, the God of the Jewish people hates immorality. Get them to be Mizana with the daughters of Moab and the daughters of Midian or whatever, and then you'll be able to do whatever you want to them. So sure enough,
they do that, then you have many Jews get involved with that, and 24,000 of them are killed in the plague, and then Pinchas ends up killing Zimri and Cosby, et cetera. We know the whole story. But after that, therefore, Hashem tells Moshe to send the Jewish people to fight a war of vengeance against Midian to avenge the chilul Hashem that was made and the dishonor to the Jewish people that was done. So now the psukim describe over there what happened. So they came back from the war and they had with them a lot of captives. They had a lot of captive animals. They had a lot of captives. They also had, among others, they had 32,000 captive girls. They had more than that to begin with. They had a lot of captive women and girls. They killed all the men, but they left alive the women and girls. And the pasuk describes when Moshe saw that, he was very angry at them. He says, "What is this? These women to begin with are the ones where all the trouble was caused through them, that the people were mizana with them and the plague broke out." Now he says, the bottom line is he tells them that you have to get the younger girls who are not yet old enough to have relations, they can be kept and they can be kept as maidservants, but the older ones have to be killed. So now let's focus on. So later on, the pasuk described how eventually what happened was the afterwards that they counted up all the spoils, they gave it out among the Jewish people and among the officers and whatever. And then the pasuk describes, and they gave a certain portion of that to the Kohanim and to the Levim. Then the pasuk describes how the officers came to Moshe and offered to donate the gold jewelry that they had captured from the Midianim to the Mishkan. So now we're going to focus on that. So the pasuk describes the banakrev as korban Hashem. The officers say we're going to offer the korban of Hashem. Ish Hashem mosa kli zahav et oda v'samid. Any person who found any golden ornament, et oda means a bracelet. V'samid is an ankle bracelet, whatever. V'samid or an arm bracelet. Kabas, a ring. Ogil v'chomaz or an ogil and a chomaz. Now, those are less familiar terms, so therefore the Gemara is going to explain what those are. Amar Rav Elazar, Ogil, Zedfus Shel Dabin. And Ogil means, Ogil literally means round, so it means something made in the shape of the breast. Rashi describes Shemunachos, right, that the breasts are in it. So basically, in other words, like a gold bra, let's say. And Kumaz, Zedfus Shel Beit HaRechem. The Kumaz, which is the last thing mentioned in the passage over there, is an image of the Beit HaRechem, of the pubic area. So again, it would be something, if we're saying that an ogil has like a golden bra, then the kumaz would be like the same thing, would be like a garment or a golden garment or a golden ornament or whatever that would be worn in that area, sort of like a pair of underwear or a chastity belt or something like that. Amr Rav Yosef says, based on that, based on Rabbi explanation, now I understand why Targum Onkelos, Rav Yosef was an expert in Targum Onkelos, the famous explanation we mentioned before, that's because he was blind, so he couldn't learn Torah Shebichtav, because he had to learn Torah Shebichtav in writing, and he couldn't do that, so therefore he specialized in Targum Onkelos, which is part of Torah Shebichtav. Anyway, he says, now that we have this explanation of Rav Elazar about the kumaz, that is the thing that goes by the Beit HaRechem, that's why the Targum translates it mochoich, which means mochoich literally means something that makes laugh. Dabar hamegi l'idei gichuch, it's something that brings to laughter and to simcha. And like Sonus, Rashi says, because Znus, a lot of times is accompanied by getting over happy and wild and whatever. So Rabba says you don't even need that. Actually, you can see from the actual word of the pasuk itself that what a kumaz is. Because kumaz stands for kan makoim zima. The word kumaz stands for here is the place of zima of zun. So even without Rabbi Elazar's explanation, you should have realized, and now you're saying that, now you can understand the Targum based on that, you should have been able to realize it from the actual word in the pasuk itself. Now, earlier it describes, it says, "Vayikseif Moshe al pekudei achoyel." It says Moshe got angry with the soldiers, with the leaders, with the captains of the soldiers. So what is he angry with them about? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Abarabor, Omer Lahen Moshe Yisrael. It means Moshe says to the Jewish people, "Shema chasartem lekukulchem." What have you gone back to the old bad thing that you did over there with the Benois Midian that caused all the trouble in the first place. In other words, Rashi says, why are you offering a korban? It seems apparently you did something wrong, and therefore you're figuring you have to bring a korban in order to be mechaper for yourself. Marsha says that's not what the Gemara means, because this pasuk by Yisrael Moshe is long before they offered the jewelry. It means right then, when Moshe saw them bringing all the women back as captives, as the pasuk says, he got angry at them, and he says, why'd you leave the women alive? And he's saying, what, did you leave them alive? And because you were mezana with them just like the old time before. Amrulai, so they answered him. They answered him, no. As the pasuk says later on, loy nifkad mimenu ish. No person was missing from us. Meaning, not missing as in was killed or captured or whatever in battle, but missing as in none of us are missing the mitzvahs that we should have been doing. None of us have gone away from Yiddishkeit and gotten involved in with these women. Amalahan in Ken Kapara Lama. So Moshe asks them, in that case, then why are you offering the gold jewelry as a kapara? Amrulai. So they answered, Imi de Avera Yasanu. We may have saved ourselves from doing an actual Avera. We were guilty of hirhur. We saw these women and we saw their jewelry and we saw their gold bras and whatever, and we had a hirhur avera, which in a certain sense, hirhur avera, the Gemara says elsewhere, hirhur avera caution avera, that in a certain sense thoughts of avera in a way are even worse than the avera itself. Partly because a person is likely to take the view, okay, I didn't do anything wrong, so there's no problem with having a hirhur. So therefore we need a kapara for that. So therefore we're saying we're bringing the korban of Hashem. Interesting, there's an interesting point. There's a Rashi in Shir Hashirim that mentions you have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, part of the praise that the man says over there for the woman representing Hashem and the Jewish people. He says, "Your teeth are all perfect, and there's nothing missing in them." So in other words, like they have, you know, like a man praised a woman that all her teeth are straight and none of them are missing, etc. Rashi explains over there, based on the Medrash, that the teeth represent the soldiers of the Jewish people. And when we say there's nothing missing of them, we're talking about that this is what we're talking about, that not only they didn't get involved in actual znus, which is such a common thing for soldiers in wartime to get involved in being mezana with or even raping or whatever, the local women here, not only they're careful with that, and loy nifkad mimenu ish, but they're even bringing a korban, they're even donating all the gold jewelry to the Mishkan to be mechaper for the bad thoughts that they have. Okay. Tanad ve Rav Shmuel, mitnei ma'a hutzruchu Yisrael shba'oitza ader kapara.
One question.
Yeah.
It's questionable. I mean, the thing is like that. If you're allowed to take a woman who's captive as a wife, it's because you have a hirhur, and there's no avera in that case.
It's not so simple to say there's no avera in that case. I mean, it's not technically an avera, and it's true that the Torah allows it. But, you know, there is the concept, like Divra Torah Ela Kenegedi Etahara. The Torah only allows it basically because human nature is such that if they're not allowed at the Heter, they're going to end up doing it the Isser. But it's still not the right thing to do. We know, we've learned about before, that, for example, when David was wondering, how comes it that I have such a lousy son as Avshalom, who was trying to kill me and was rebelling against me, and his friend Hushai Arki explained to him, because you did wrong by taking a Yupasa, even though technically you're allowed to Afi Alocha. So the same thing over here, we're saying, so it's better if they don't do that. If they do, okay, you know, there is a way that the Torah says to do it for Heter, but it's not the right thing to do, and therefore, so they're saying that after all, and in this case, anyway, with Benois Midian, they didn't even have that, because not necessarily are they even allowed to take a Yufas Torah from them again. Like Moshe told them, the whole problem was caused in the first place by Jewish men getting involved and being mezana with these women, so you don't want to leave any of them alive, you don't want to leave any of the ones who are of age to do that, to be mezana, alive, such that they're going to be machshel the Jewish people in the future. So in this particular case, at least, they had no business being involved with these women at all, and therefore they're saying that we need a kapara for the fact that we had hirhurim about them. So in fact, the Gemara continues, Tana Dveda Bishmol, Mipnei Ma'a Hutzruchu Yisrael Sheba Oysa Adir Kapara. Why indeed were the Jewish people requiring a kapara at that point? The reason is precisely that. Mipnei Shazonu Einayim in Erva. Because they satisfied their eyes with Erva. Because they enjoyed the look. They enjoyed looking at these women and at their jewelry and whatever. And that itself was a problem. Marsha points out, Zonu is not only Meloshin Mozoin, as Rashi says, that they satisfied, but also Meloshin Znus, that they committed Znus with their eyes, even if not with their actual body, and therefore they need a kapara for that. So again, this that you're talking about, the Yafas Toyar, let's stress, that's talking about, Rashi mentions over there, right at the beginning, the Mochemes Rishus Bakos Medamber. The Pasuk there is talking about the kind of optional war that the Jewish people are fighting, for example, to keep the Goyim from harassing them in the future or whatever. Here it was a war for a specific purpose, Losis Nikmas Hashem of Midian, to take Hashem's vengeance against Midian. And therefore, yeah, they're not allowed to get involved with these women. And therefore, the fact that even they had a hearer about them requires them to bring a kapara. Amr of Sheshet, so in this connection, also of Sheshet says, why does the Pasuk list together, the Pasuk is listing all this jewelry, and we have some kind of jewelry which is worn on the outside of the body, for example, finger rings and things like that, and then it mentioned also tachshitin shebefnim, things that are supposed to be worn under clothing, for example, the golden bra and the kumas and whatever, the ogul and the kumas. So why is it listing all together? The question is why it has to even be listing the jewelry in the first place. It could have just, the Torah could have just easily enough said that they said to Moshe, we want to donate all the gold jewelry we got. Loi malach, this comes to teach you. Call him a stock of esbek tanish al isha. If a man looks inappropriately at even a woman's little finger, and he's doing, which is where she wears a ring. It's as if he's looking at her private area, which is the place where the kumas goes. In other words, he has no business looking at her where he's looking for the purpose of just enjoying the view or whatever, whether he's looking at a private area or whether even he's looking at a public area. That's why, therefore, the Pasuk mentions them all together to imply that point. And again, that's what we're saying. We looked at these women. They're saying we looked at these women. We had thoughts of Aveda. We didn't actually carry it out in practice. Very nice, but we still need a kapara for the fact that we looked at them that way. Okay. Mishnah continues.
Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that. I mean,
of course, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that, but he asked them, what's going on over here? Why do you leave these women alive? And why you bring a kapara? And they were explaining to him, because we had a hero of Eira. He wouldn't have known that they had a hero of Eira if they didn't tell him. But now that they told him, then he accepts. Okay, well, in that case, then of course I'll accept this from you, because, yeah, of course, he knows very well that Ahura and Aveira are a serious thing. Okay. Mishnah says. Now, okay, so we've talked about now as follows. We've gone through the things that people are not allowed to wear midrabanan. We've talked about the things that you're not allowed to wear d'oraisa. Now we're going to talk about things that you are allowed to wear on Shabbos. Even various kinds of ornaments or various kinds of accessories that a person is allowed to wear in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, Yoytze isha b'chute seir, a woman is allowed to go out on Shabbos with strands of hair that are braided into her own hair. Now, we learned at the beginning of the parak that if they're made out of wool or linen, then you have a problem, because then they're going to be a chatzitza there if she needs to tovel, and so if she has to tovel on Shabbos, she may take them off and she may end up carrying them. But here, where it's hair that's wound in or braided in with her own hair, then there's not an issue, because then it's not a chatzitza, because hair doesn't attach that tightly to hair, and therefore it's not going to be a chatzitza, and water will be able to get in. In fact, you have the Shonim who say that that's only if these are individual hairs, if they're made out of several hairs. If they're made out of several strands of hair that are woven together, then it could be a problem. The other way around. If it's made out of multiple strands of hair that are woven together, that are braided or spun or whatever together, then the hair doesn't stick to hair that closely. Therefore, it's not a chatzitza. But if it was one strand of hair, then it actually would be a problem. Okay. Anyway, so she's allowed to wear. So she has, let's say, these hair bands or hair ties or whatever that are made out of multiple strands of hair that are woven together, that are woven or spun or whatever together. But she's allowed to wear that on Shabbos. Be'mishalah, that's true whether it's from her own hair, that she herself cut off some of her hair and made it into a hair tie. Be'mishalchavata, or whether it comes from hair from another woman. Be'mishalbehema, or whether it comes from animal, or whether it comes from animal hair, for example, like we talked about, I'm going to owl up the hair from a tail of a horse or whatever. Any of those things she's allowed to go out with on Shabbos with them woven into her, with them woven into her hair, or used as hair ties or whatever. Also, over tetefes or a savitin, this man chain tefillin, she's also allowed to go out on Shabbos with a tetefes and a savitin when they're sewn onto her hat. So tetefes and savitin, we learned at the beginning of the parak. Tetefes is a type of hairband, and a savitin are things that hang down from it by the sides of her face. So this, and he said over there that rich women made them out of gold and silver. Poor people made them out of colored cloth. Whatever the point is, he said over there that if they're not sewn to her hat, then she's not allowed to wear them outside midrabanan because she may take them off and show them off to her friends. But if they're sewn onto her hat, then she's allowed because again, she's not going to take off her hat in public and uncover her hair. Being a married woman, she's not allowed to do that. We talked about over there that the Rambam says, given that, then therefore, if it's an unmarried girl, then she wouldn't be allowed to, because an unmarried girl, of course, is allowed to uncover her hair in public. Okay. So here is where they're sewn to her hat. So therefore, if it's a married woman, then she's not going to show it off because she's not going to uncover her hair. Also, the kovel of a pay and not with a chaser, she's also allowed to wear a kovel, which we talked about earlier in the parak, two possibilities of what kovel is. We said one possibility is the woolen cap that she wears under her hat or under her snood or whatever. The other possibility we said it was a kind of badge or emblem or something that an eved wears around their neck to show that they're an eved. So you're allowed to wear those in a chaser. You're allowed to wear those in a chaser. You're not allowed to wear them in a shofar abim, but you are allowed to wear them. In the chaser for reasons that the Gemara is going to say. We're talking about a chaser that has an eruv. Now you actually have. We talked about at the beginning of the parak. We talked about a three-way machlokes rishonim about the other things. Are we saying that the other things you're not allowed to wear in the chaser and maybe not even in the house because you may walk out to them with them to the shul rabbin? Or are we saying that they're also in the chaser because you're not allowed to wear them outside the house? But you're allowed to wear them inside the house. That's how Rashi learns. And then you have another opinion that when we're saying that the other ones are not allowed on a chaser, it's only when the chaser doesn't have an eruv. If the chaser has an eruv, then you would be allowed to wear them in there anyway. Okay. Anyway, but over here we're saying the kovel she's allowed to wear in a chaser for reasons that the Gemara is going to say. So the reason why the Gemara is going to say is because the Chachamim had to allow the women to wear some kinds of ornaments on Shabbos in order that they don't look unattractive to their husbands. So a kovel is one such thing. Tosfos earlier in the parak talks about if we say that a kovel is the slave badge, then there's a different reason that he should be allowed to wear it in the chaser in order that the master doesn't start thinking that the eved over here is getting uppity and thinking that he doesn't need to listen to the master anymore, and that's going to cause fights between them. So therefore, according to that, then the chachamim would allow him to wear that in the chaser, just not in the shul. Okay, so that's a kovel. Also, with pay and nachri for chaser. Also, a woman is allowed to go out on Shabbos, is allowed to go into the chaser on Shabbos. Again, whether we mean a chaser with or without an eruv, that's subject to that machlokes, as we were saying before, with a pay and nachri. A pay and nachri is a wig. So you have a woman who doesn't have a lot of hair and would wear a wig in order to hide the fact that she doesn't have very much hair. Nowadays, of course, we have wigs that women wear as a way of covering their hair, and you have a major machlokes of poskim whether they're allowed to. You do actually have poskim. We all know that there are communities where they don't hold of the concept of wearing a wig. They hold davka, you have to wear a hat or a snood or what have you. But we're mentioning over here a wig. So according to those opinions, we would say the wig over here is she wears that under her hat or her whatever, and that way at least she looks like she has more hair, which the hat or the tichel or whatever is covering, and that way she doesn't look unattractive. If you say that you're allowed to, as of course we hold, and in fact we know that the Rebbe held that's better to wear a, 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 better to wear a wig than a tichel, because she's less likely to take it off in the street, or she's less likely to be embarrassed of it or whatever and take it off in the street, then therefore only that an actual wig she's allowed to wear in the chutzah, without anything else covering it. Okay. She's also allowed to go on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah. The moich sheba ozna, a woman or a man for that matter, could go out with a piece of cotton stuck into their ear, for example, if they have a lot of earwax, over moich sheba sandala, or with a piece of cotton or something soft or whatever inside her sandal, inside her sandal, where, for example, the bottom of the sandal is hard and she wants something softer to step on. So Rashi says, Latino, she's doing it in order to enjoy walking with the sandal more, because otherwise the hard bottom of it hurts. So she's allowed to do that. Over moichshe skin on the nidasa, she's also allowed to wear something soft, again, like a piece of cotton or whatever, to absorb the blood of her nida. Rashi says she would do that in order to prevent the blood from soaking into her clothing, so it doesn't make her clothing dirty. Tosfos argues on that and says if it's to keep her clothes clean, it would actually be osur, because we've learned before in the Masechta, you're not allowed to wear something whose only purpose is to keep clothing clean. Rather, she's wearing it in order that the blood doesn't go on her actual skin, and then it's going to dry up there and be uncomfortable. Anyway, she's allowed to go out with that on Shabbos, as we'll see in the Gemara, why those things are not a problem. She's also allowed to go out on Shabbos with tilfo over galgo melach. She's also allowed to go out on Shabbos with a pepper. Rashi describes as a long pepper. It doesn't mean the kind of peppers that we have, that we put in salads or whatever. Those are native to America. They didn't have those in those days. We mean like black pepper or whatever, but some kind of long pepper, which is good for if she has bad breath, then she puts that in her mouth and keeps it in her mouth in order to take away the effect of the bad breath. So she's allowed to go out with that on Shabbos, or with galgal melach, or with a piece of salt, which she puts in her mouth, as the Gemara is going to say, if she has a toothache, it helps with that. She's allowed to go out with that on Shabbos. Or anything else that she is putting in her mouth for those kinds of purposes, for purposes like that, like bad breath or toothaches or whatever, for anything like that. As long as she doesn't put the thing in on Shabbos, it has to be something that she previously put in her mouth before Shabbos, and now she's putting it again. Because the problem, so Tosfos says, what would be the problem with putting it in on the first time on Shabbos? The first Tosfos starts quoting Harav Rabbeinu Poras that the problem is because since it's for refuah, then it would be also on Shabbos, as we've learned a few times already, that things that are done for refuah, the Chachamim in general after them on Shabbos. Tosfos says, I don't like that because we're saying over here, because the Mishnah continues, the Mishnah continues that if it did fall out from her mouth and she's not allowed to put it back in, if it was meant for refuah, and we're saying that the reason she's allowed to put that she's allowed, as long as she put it in at least one time before Shabbos, then actually it would be mutter to put it back in on Shabbos. So that can't be the reason. Therefore, Tosfos gives a different reason that she's not allowed to put it in the hatchila, because then it looks like she's trying to play a trick over here. It looks like what it is that in fact, Tosfos says that actually the it would apply to all of them. It would apply to the cotton that she's putting in her ear or in her sandal or whatever, all those things. If she doesn't put them in before Shabbos, then it makes it look like she's just trying to play a trick over here, like she's trying to carry it out from point A to point B on Shabbos, and therefore she's putting it in her ear or she's putting it in her mouth in order to take it there. Therefore, Tosfos learns that it would be usur for her. That's why we say that she can't put it in to begin with on Shabbos, because then it looks like she's just trying to do it for the purpose of carrying it from point A to point B. Although Tosfos says maybe in that case not. Maybe in that case with the pepper it's not a problem. Maybe it's only okay the case with the salt. Okay. Anyway, the imnafal, the Mishnah says, if any of these things fell out of her mouth, Lloyd taxed her, she's not allowed to put it back in on Shabbos. Because again, if she puts it back in on Shabbos, then she thinks, then it makes it look. So again, according to Tosfos's first explanation, it would be because it's refuah, and you're not allowed to do refuah on Shabbos. So if it's in there, then it's in there, but you can't put it back in. According to Tosfos's second explanation, because now people are going to think that she's putting it in there to begin with in order to carry it. They're not going to realize that she's putting it in there because she has bad breath or because or toothache or what have you. Okay. Continues the Mishnah, Shein Toitebes Shein Shaldav, a false tooth or a golden tooth. Rebbe Master, the Chachamim Oishim, Rebbe says she's allowed to go out with it on Shabbos, and the Chachamim say that not. Rashi brings over here a couple of explanations. One is that Shein Toteves is, and Shein Chozov is the same thing. It means a false tooth made out of gold, or the Rambam explains it a little bit differently, not a false tooth, but a cat for a tooth made out of gold. Now, we're not talking about the kind of casts that we have nowadays that are permanently cemented on. We're talking about the kind that they had in the olden days, which would be like a temporary cap or whatever. Anyway, so Rashi's first explanation is that it means that it's one thing. The problem is, because it looks so much different from her other teeth, she may end up, they'll laugh at her, you have that ridiculous-looking thing in your mouth, and therefore she's going to take it and carry it on Shabbos. And then Rashi points out, the Gemara is going to mention later on, we'll learn it tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that in that case, if it's made out of silver, it's not a problem, because silver looks much more like the other teeth, and therefore it's not something that people are going to make fun of her. Rashi gives a second explanation over here, that these are two different cases. Shein Toteves means a replacement tooth that came from somebody else, that she is allowed to wear on Shabbos, because it looks similar to her other teeth. And then you have, when it's made out of gold instead, then you have the machlokes of Rebbe and the Chachamim, whether it's allowed. That's the second explanation. Rashi later on brings another explanation from his Rebbeim his own explanation. He says that the reason why it would be also made out of gold is because since gold is so expensive, if it falls out on Shabbos, she may carry it. Okay. Anyway, so that's according to Sir Debbie would say that's not a problem, and the Chachamim would say it is a problem. So those are the various explanations. Okay. So this more starts off with Tzricha.
One question. How can a woman go out with sandals? It seems to be very unsneers.
Well, if it's the kind of, no, because a woman's feet are not erva. A woman's legs are erva. But what part of the leg is erva? We've talked about, we learned in Brachas, shoik v'isha erva, and we talked about over there, there's a machlokes haposkim, what exactly is considered the shoik, whether it's the upper leg or whether it's the lower leg. Even if you say it's the lower leg, fine, her ankles and below that are not a problem. So she could be wearing sandals that her toes and whatever are exposed in places. So yeah, in places where the local minhag is not to do that, like, you know, here, nowadays, for example, it's uncommon for people to wear sandals. So yeah, when you have something, the general rule is you have certain minimum standards of sneers that apply everywhere, and then you have standards of sneers that vary by community. So in this case, so you have certain rules of sneers that are universal. One of them being, for example, let's say it's, for example, the shoik. So even if you have, let's say, in places where women go around with shorts, let's say, then it would be also for a Jewish woman to do that, because that's part of the basic dinim of sneers. But then you have, within that, then you have, beyond that, then you have certain rules that apply in some places and not others. One of them being this question about sandals versus shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so now, again, in the beginning of the Mishnah, we talk about three cases where she's wearing hair ties or hair extensions or whatever made out of actual hair. We said whether it was made out of her own hair, another woman's hair, or animal hair. So I'm going to point out with Tzricha. Why do we need to mention all three cases? Like this. If we only mention where she has the hair extensions or whatever are made out of her own hair, then you would say, you know why it's allowed? It shouldn't be my voice, because it's not disgusting for her. No, she's not going. People are not going to make fun of her, and she's going to take it off in her shifted oven because it's her own hair after all. So therefore, there's not a problem. Avo chavata, but when it comes from another woman, the moist, you could argue maybe it's more disgusting, and therefore, people are more likely to make fun of her in the street, and therefore she might take it off and carry it. So you would think, amaloi, so maybe then she's not allowed to wear it. So therefore it needs to mention the case of hair, therefore it needs to mention the case where the hair comes from another woman. The iash min and the chavata, if it only mentioned it where it comes from another woman, okay, you could say, you know why it's allowed? Because at least the bas minahu. Okay, look, I mean, at least another woman, after all, by the way, that I'm not explaining, why would another woman's hair be moist to her? What if the other woman had some kind of disease of the scalp or whatever? But still, we say you're allowed to because, okay, you know, obviously if this other woman has that disease, you're not going to be wearing her hair in the first place. But if it only mentioned that, you would say, okay, you would say, okay, look, at least another woman is still another human being. So therefore, it's less likely that people are going to make fun. But when the hair comes from an animal, like from the tail of a horse, you would think it's not even the same species. They're more likely to make fun of her, and therefore she might take it off on Shabbos. So amaloi, maybe she shouldn't be allowed to wear it as hair extensions or hair ties on Shabbos. So therefore, we need all three cases. Even in the case where it's animal hair, once she went to the trouble of tying her hair or braiding her hair with it, then she's not going to take it out. So therefore, there's no problem. Now, obviously, that means the Mishnah could have only mentioned behema and not the other two, but it's a very common thing that the Mishnah will do that it'll mention the more obvious thing and then the less obvious thing. So there's no problem if we have the Mishnah formulated like that. Okay. Tana, we learn in a brisa, although vad shall I take the kena b'shol yalda, shall I take the yalda b'shol skena, or skena b'shol yalda. However, though, a young woman is not allowed to wear an older woman's hair like that, braided into her hair, or use as a hair tie or whatever, or vice versa, an old woman to use a younger woman's hair is not allowed to. So I'm going to ask why. Okay, I can understand. An old woman wearing a younger woman's hair, braided into her hair, it's a shvach, it's a praise for her, it makes her look younger. So therefore, you would have thought that she's allowed to wear it on Shabbos because there is not a concern that people are gonna laugh at her. And nevertheless, there is still the concern that somebody is going to say, hey, that doesn't match your hair at all. What are you wearing it? So we understand why that. But why do we even need to mention that a young woman is not allowed to go out with an old woman's hair? It's a gnai, so of course there's a reason that they're going to make fun of her, and she might take it off and carry it. So why do we even need to mention it? Or Tosfos brings another explanation. It's such a gnai, she wouldn't even wear such a thing on weekdays. Why even mention such a case that she's never going to do? The answer is you're right. I did tana skena b'shol yalda, tana nami yalda b'shol skena. You're right, but since the Braisa had to mention that an old woman is not allowed to wear a younger woman's hair, even though you would think that people are less likely to make fun of her for it, so therefore it also mentioned the other way around that she's not allowed to do either. Although it's interesting that Rambam actually learns differently. The Rambam learns that a young woman is actually allowed to go out wearing an older woman's hair as hair extensions or whatever. And the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam say over there that either he had a different girsa, or he says that when the Gemara means the Kesef Mishnah says he has a different girsa, the Magid Mishnah says over there that maybe he understood our Gemara to be saying that the Mishnah in fact didn't need to, that the Braisa didn't even need to mention that case at all, because in fact he is allowed to. Okay.
It's a circular logic. It's a very circular logic that first of all you have a question: why do you need to say that? The young one bearing the old woman's wig, there's no need. And the answer to that is, well, we said just because it's parallel. That's a circular logic. It doesn't answer
the question. In other words, according to the simple explanation of the Gemara, what the Gemara is saying is, in fact, it didn't have to mention the case of the young woman wearing the older woman's hair, either because people never do that in the first place. Nobody would do that because it would be so embarrassing in the first place they wouldn't even bother, or because if they did, it's so obvious that they would make fun of them that it wouldn't be allowed. But nevertheless, once it mentions one, then it mentions the other. According to the Magid Mishnah over there, we're saying that the Rambam would understand that in fact it was unnecessary to mention it, that in fact she is allowed, because the Rambam, he also explains, it was like this, the Rambam explains the reason why it's also is because she may show them off to her friends. So therefore, the Magid Mishnah says, in that case then, with a young woman wearing older woman's hair braided into hers, is obviously not going to take it off and show it off because it's a gnai. Therefore, the Rambam would learn that actually it is allowed. And when the Braisa mentioned it, in other words, it was not, the Braisa shouldn't have mentioned it at all because it was unnecessary to, because in fact it's mutter. The Kesef Mishnah doesn't like that. He says that maybe the Rambam had a different girsa in the Gemara. Okay. Anyway, going on. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said that a woman is allowed to wear a koval, again, this cap that goes under her, this cap that goes under her hat. She's allowed to wear that, or a peyon nochris, or a or a wig. She's allowed to wear into a chotzer, again, whether it means a chotzer with or without an eruv, as we discussed before. Omar Rav, so Rav says, the rule is like this. Kol she'otru l'chachamim losek v'le shoset avim, anything which the chachamim said you're not allowed to wear in the shoset avim, all the various jewelry and accessories that we learned earlier in our perek, also losek v'le chachamim, all of those things you're also not allowed to wear even into the chachamim, and according to some Rishonim, according to Tosfos, maybe not even in the house. Not Tosfos over here, but the various other Rishonim and Tosfos elsewhere talks about that maybe it would be also even in the house, because you might wear them out into the street, except chutz mikovel or peyon nochris, except for the kovel and peyon nochris, as it says in our Mishnah. On the other hand, Rabban Noni bar Sosin, Mishmei Rabbi Shmuel Amar, hakol kekovel. Rabban Noni bar Sosin says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, everything is like a kovel, and just like you're allowed to wear a kovel in the chaser, everything else that we mentioned in these various mishnayos that you're also to wear in the chaser and the drabonon are also like a kovel, and you're allowed to wear them in the chaser. Now the question is, none. We learn in our mishnah the kovel of a peyon nochris the chaser. Only a kovel and a peyon nochris is allowed in the chaser. Bishleim l'rav micha. So according to Rav, that's exactly what we're saying. El Rabbanoni bar Sosin Kasha. What is Rabbanoni bar Sosin going to do with our Mishnah that mentions only the Kovel or the Peyon Nochris, implying that everything else is also even in the Chaser? The answer is Rabbanoni bar Sosin is not saying it on his own. Rabbanoni bar Sosin Mishmei the Man Kamalei. Who is Rabbanoni bar Sosin saying in the name of? He's not saying it on his own. He's saying Mishmei Rabbi Shmuel bar Yosi. Well, Rabbi Shmuel bar Yosi Tana, who will call him? Rabbi Shmuel bar Yosi himself is a Tana. He's able to argue with our Mishnah. We had him in this week's Pirkei Avos. So he's a Tana. He's able to argue with our Mishnah. So, okay, the Mishnah says only a Kovel and a Peyon Nochris. Rabbi Shmuel bar Yosi can argue with that and say that all the other jewelry and accessories and whatever. So we still have to distinguish between the ones that are also Daraisa. Those she's not allowed to even in the Chaser. But we're talking about the ones that were also midrabanan, because you might take them off and show them off, or because they might fall off or whatever. So those would be allowed in a chaser, according to him. Who is the halacha like? So here's where Tosfos discusses the point that we talked about at the beginning of the parak. The fact of the matter is, we see nowadays women wear all kinds of jewelry outdoors, even in the street, and there's no problem. So what is that? So one possibility, Tosfos starts by saying that the halacha would be like Rabbanani, therefore be allowed in a chotzer, and Tosfos learns that means even in a chotzer that does not have an eruv. So there you go. Stage one, therefore, is they're allowed to wear it even in a chotzer that has no eruv. Then Tosfos goes on to say that in our times we don't have a true Rishus Rabin, because again, Tosfos goes L'shitasem in a few other places, that a Rishus Rabin requires 600,000 people going through it every day, and we don't have that. In Tosfos' time, you had very few, if any, cities in the world that even had such a size population. So therefore, so it amounts to like a chotzer shenim or rebbe, and it amounts to like a kaimelis, therefore it would be allowed. That's one point. Then Tosfos brings up another point, that it's one thing if you have a city that has Rishos Rabim in it, then you would say maybe you can't do such things in a Kaimelis, because it's very easy to be confusable that you're going to go in Kaimelis and you're going to end up walking in Rishos Rabim. But if the whole city doesn't have Rishos Rabim, then maybe you can be more makel, Tosfos says. Also, then Tosfos mentions another point, which we also mentioned at the beginning of the paragraph, that in those times it was very common for women to show off their jewelry to each other. In fact, we talked about the idea that in those times it was less common b'chlal for women to have jewelry. The Rama says something similar. In those times, women didn't have very much jewelry. So Tosfos says, in those times, the women were more prone to show it off to each other because they were more proud of their jewelry, or because Rama says they had less of it. So therefore, whenever they had, it was something to show off. Whereas nowadays, that women are less proud of that kind of thing, and they have more jewelry, so therefore there's less of an issue, and that's another reason to be makel. And then the final thing is, Tosfos says that ultimately, even if we say that it should be also d'rabbanan, nevertheless, in things that are d'rabbanan, if they're not going to listen to us, then don't even bother telling them, because most of you are shaking and volume of it. But all of those are the various factors that come in that we talked about before, of why women wear many kinds of jewelry on Shabbos that, in principle, according to what we're learning in our parish, ought to have been offered. But again, so again, nowadays we do have cities that maybe do have a true Rosh Hashanah, because places like New York, obviously, you have some streets that do easily have 600,000 people going through them every day. So therefore, maybe the only heter is on the basis of this mukav yoshogin ba'al yom hazidin, but it still means therefore in that case maybe a person should be careful for themselves. So okay. Again, you also have the other question about whether men are allowed to wear such things on Shabbos, because again, the question is whether men are more likely to even take them off and show them off in the first place. Now, so the question is, okay, so according to Rav Maishnahami, so getting back to Rav's opinion, that he's saying that like the Mishnah says, only a kobol or pay knockers are allowed to be worn in the chotzer. Again, a chotzer without an eruv, as Tosfos says. So why is that? Why should a kobol or pay knockers be the exception? The answer is, Oma Ola, Kadesh Gana al Baila. The reason is because you don't want to make the woman unattractive to her husband. You want to have, at least she should be able to wear some kind of her finery on Shabbos, and that way, in the chosda, where her husband sees her, then at least she should be able to wear something that'll make her look nice. To the Tanya, like we have a similar concept when it comes to a woman when she's nida. A braita says, v'hadava b'nida, so the pasuk says that a woman who is dava, which means sick, or flowing, or whatever, in her nida, so what does it mean, in her nida? Zakenim harishonim amru, the earlier Chachamim said, what that means is she has to be completely separated from her husband. So not just, in other words, obviously there can't have any physical contact, that we know, but it means, on top of that, it means during the time when she's nida, she's not allowed to put eyeshadow around her eyes. She's not allowed to put rouge on her cheeks. She shouldn't wear colorful clothing, all of those things to keep her completely away from her husband, so her husband is b'chlal not attracted to her. Ad shebar Rav Akiva b'limid, until Rav Akiva came, so they said, in other words, that's what the pasuk means when it says b'nidosa, means that she has to be doing something to demonstrate that she's nida. Until Rav Akiva came and taught, Ian Kane, if you're going to say that, if you're going to make her that she can't wear any of her makeup or any of her colorful clothing at all, Atim Agana Albaila, then you're going to make her, she's going to be, during the time when she's nida, she's unattractive to her husband. Venimsa Baila Magarsha, and it's going to wind up, therefore, it makes it more likely that her husband might divorce her. Now, obviously, it's not because right now she's unattractive, but because in general, if they're anyway not getting along, then he might use that. That might be like kind of the luck. To him. She looks so ugly now, I can't be bothered to stay married to her, and he's just going to go off and give her again. So Rav Akiva says, so what do we learn from the word benidasa? Means benidasa tehei, and she covered by mayim. She remains in her nida status until she toggles in the mitzvah. Even after she stops bleeding and whatever, she still has the status of nida until she actually toggles for it. So the point is, Rav Akiva says, so we see, in other words, that the earlier chachamim were not concerned about that, and they said she needs to be unattractive during the time when she's nida, and Rav Akiva is saying that not. So by the same token, in other words, we're saying we want her to be at least somewhat attractive to her husband on Shabbos, even though she can't wear most of her jewelry, so that's why Rav is saying, and that's why the Mishnah is saying, that therefore we're allowing her some of her jewelry and some of her accessories on Shabbos, namely her kovel and her pay and nachos. Okay. And by the way, Rav Yaakov Emden points out, so why tackle words the earlier Chachamim concerned about that? He says, because in the earlier times, the people were on a higher level. We had in the previous parak, we had the story of the guy who never realized that his wife was missing a hand. So therefore, by the same token, the earlier Chachamim weren't so concerned that there's a possibility the guy is going to say, my wife is unattractive, I don't want to stay married to her. Whereas Rav Akiva said, no, we can't do that because the people are not on the same level anymore. Okay. Anyway, so by the same token, Rav is saying that that's why she's allowed to wear her kovel and her peyer nachlis, because those things at least help her be attractive on Shabbos. Okay. But Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, so now another thing that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, which is actually on the surface, it doesn't really seem to be connected with what we talked about before, but it is, I mean, you know, we're going to talk about something where the Chachamim asked something in one place, is it also in other places? And here, therefore, it kind of relates to what we're talking about. This that we're saying, that you're not allowed to wear certain kinds of jewelry and whatever in Rosh Hashanah, but we're saying you're allowed to wear them in the Chaser. So how does, you know, usually we say that what applies in one doesn't apply in the other, applies in the other, but here we sort of have an exception to that.
Whenever
the Chachamim answered something because of Maris Ayin, and in fact, Rashi gives an example of things that we learned earlier in the Perek. We learned, for example, that a man is not allowed to wear on Shabbos armor or army boots or an army helmet or whatever, because it makes it look like he's going to go to war on Shabbos. So whenever the Chachamim asked it, this is the same Maris Ayin, it would be also even if it's in one room inside another. So a person is not allowed to wear, let's say, the army helmet, even if it's inside his own house where nobody sees him. So the Gemara says, is that true? It's none. We learned in the previous parak, the loy bezug, we said that a donkey or other kind of animal is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a bell around its neck. Alpha pisha pokul, even though the bell is stuffed with material to keep it from ringing. And we said the reason was because it makes it look like he's going to sell it in the market. But Vitanya Idach, but we learned in another brisa, Vitanya Allah actually says on the side of here, we learned in a brisa on that. However, however, the owner of the animal can stuff up the bell with straw or whatever and leave the bell around the animal's neck. And then you're allowed to walk around with the animal in the chotzer. So then we see that something that's also in Rosh Hashanah because of Maris Ayin is allowed in the Chaser. So what do you mean when Rav is saying that it's not? What do you mean when Rav is saying it's not allowed? The answer is the Gemara says Tanoi. It's actually a Machlokas Tanoim. The Tanya, we learn the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa later in our Masechta. What if you have a person whose clothes got wet on Shabbos? So let's say, for example, he got caught out in the rain. So the Braisa says, once he comes home, he's allowed to take off the wet clothes and spread them out in the sun in order to dry them, but not in a place in front of people where people are going to see him. So you see, therefore, that, but Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon Oisrin, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon are saying that it's also, even if it's in a private area, because they say once it's also to do it in public for sure, because people are going to think he washed his clothes on Shabbos and now he's hanging them out to dry. And Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon are saying that it would be also even in private, because once something is also, because of Maris Ayin, then it's also even in private. So Rab is going according to that. So Rav is going according to that. Whereas the Bryce that we quoted before about allowing the animal to walk around with a stuffed bell is according to the Chachamim who disagree with that. Okay. In general, most of the poskim paskim like Rav, that when something is also because of Maris Ayin, it's also everywhere. Although there is an explanation that maybe where the concern is only that we're going to be choshed that he was over on an Isser D'Rabbanon, maybe that rule doesn't apply. So in our case over here, actually, in the case of the bell, for example, the whole reason why it's also is because we're concerned people are going to think he's taking the animal to sell in the market. Selling is an issue that I'm born on. So therefore, we're not concerned about that if he does it in a chaser. But other things where we're concerned that people are going to think he was over on issue d'oraisa, then we said, like, for example, putting out clothes to dry, which would be an issue d'oraisa, then therefore it would be also. So then that would be also to do it even in private.
So that's a gzera on a gzera.
It's not a gzera on a gzera. No, that's the thing. We're saying there's in the case of drying clothes would be also on a daraisa level. Therefore, you're not allowed to do it in public or even in private because when you do it in public, people are going to think that you were over on the issur daraisa. And when you do it in private, if you do it in private, you're going to come to do it in public. But when it comes to, you have, now again, not everybody agrees with this next point, but you have poskim who say that if the original issur that people might be choshed that he's doing is itself only d'rabbanan, then you are allowed to do it in private. Okay.
Yeah.